providing you with the tools, knowledge, skills, and power to advance your career, grow your business, and build a better future for your community. We are the Tourism Academy. Welcome to Business Class. Joining me today is Beth Potter, Executive Director at the Tourism Industry Association of Canada. Beth reminds us of the importance of tourism to the Canadian economy and the role the industry has as a global sport. She also shares some of her favorite travel memories, including how one awful moment led to a life-changing and amazing travel experience. Stay tuned for this episode of Business Class with Beth Potter. All right, Steve Ekstrom here, host of Business Class, a tourismacademy.org podcast. And the best part of my day is getting to talk to people who are making their living and making a difference in the tourism industry. Today's guest is no different. Beth Potter from the Tourism Industry Association of Canada. Beth is the president and CEO, and she has a wonderful, delightful background on her screen that reminds me of Canadian butter tarts and horse and buggies that I've seen on dirt roads just like that. So welcome to Business Class, Beth.
Thank you very much, Stephen. Thanks for having me.
Is there a horse and buggy somewhere in that picture or no?
No, there isn't.
Okay.
This is a field showcasing our wonderful prairie provinces, this one in particular, Saskatchewan.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Ontario. Born and bred in Toronto, you know, as they try to tell us it's the center of the universe, but it's not. But I grew up a city girl, but very much enjoyed traveling from a very young age all around the world.
What's the first trip that you remember?
Well, we moved to England when I was about two. We lived there for a couple of years while my dad did his architectural apprenticeship. And my parents made that decision so that they could travel Europe with a young family. And so that's what we did. We had our VW caravan van that my dad had outfitted in the back with, you know, the fold down bed and everything. And we traveled the European countries that way during our holidays and weekends.
And how old were you when you moved back from Europe?
I was five.
Is there a specific moment in all of your travels that really stands out to you as being just magical? And this is beyond when you were five, of course.
Okay. Oh, so many. You know, I remember at the age of 16 seeing the Grand Canyon for the first time, and also visiting with the Navajo Indians on their reserve lands in Arizona. We have lots and lots of family across the United States, so we've seen many different parts of the United States. One of my favorite countries to visit is France, and I was very, very lucky. I've been there many times, and I was very lucky to be able to spend some time there with my mom and my daughter about 10 or 12 years ago. And we rented a little house in Provence and explored all of the different villages for about 3 weeks, and that was a pretty amazing vacation.
Whose idea was it for you and your mom and daughter to all take a trip together?
Well, it was actually a friend of ours who had invited my daughter to come and visit when she was 15. And when the invitation was initially given out, my friends lived in England. But by the time my daughter was 15, they had moved to the south of France. And of course, my mom being a traveler at heart as well, like, how do we get in on this? We made the decision that we were just going to hone in on that trip. So my daughter did have some time on her own with our friends, and that gave me some time on my own with my mom, which was something that, you know, I'll treasure forever.
A few years back, my sister, my mother and grandmother and I all took a trip to Ireland together.
Oh, nice.
And I have to say, I'm so glad that we did it because, like you said, there are moments from that trip that I will never forget.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think we'll see more multi-generational travel. What has been the best piece of advice that you've gotten professionally?
to slow down and listen. You know, I work in a member-based organization, and I have for many, many years, and it's the members that we represent. And so really taking that time to listen and hear what their concerns are, what are the things that are impacting, you know, their way of doing business or their way of life, that has been probably the best piece of advice I've ever been given. And it's helped in both my professional and my personal life.
In the last 18 months, how would you say your job function has changed? What innovations have you seen come from that?
As the pandemic hit and the tourism and travel sectors were basically shut down, we were the first hit, you know, the hardest hit, we'll be the last to recover. We became, you know, myself and my team became really a lifeline to those business owners, to the operators, to workers from our industry that didn't know where to turn. They didn't know where to go and get the answers. They didn't know who to talk to that could understand what they were going through. And so one of the things that we became was just that voice on the other end of the phone, the ear, the shoulder, making sure that we listened carefully, that we were empathetic and supportive. And when we were asked questions, if we didn't have the answers, we went and found them. And just constant communications. I mean, I don't know what this would have been like had we not had technology like Zoom and Microsoft Teams, because those have been absolutely game changers for us in our communications with our members and with government, to be able to continue to have those conversations and to be able to see, you know, the visual clues while we're having those conversations. That's been incredibly important. I think the best thing that I've seen come out of all of this is the unity that has come from across the industry. You know, I always refer to tourism as a suite of sectors because, you know, people think about tourism, they think about airplanes and hotels and car rentals. They think about vacations, but it's so much more than that. It's things to do. It's the attractions. It's the outdoor recreation activities. It's business trips and business meetings. And there's so many different kinds of businesses that make up our industry. And yet we've all come together. And the collaboration that I have seen over the last year and a half, I've just never seen it before. It's just been outstanding and works. We've been able to bring partners together that may not even think that they're in the tourism industry. The echo of our voice has grown because of it, and that has really helped. And when we were trying to get our messages across to government about the kinds of supports that the industry is needed.
Do you think that perhaps a silver lining from this was an understanding of the relevance of tourism in economic ways?
I really do. When we talk about tourism in Canada, prior to COVID, it was a $105 billion a year industry. It represented almost 3% of our GDP and employed 1.8 million Canadians. You know, to see that slashed in half and the reality of our contributions to the, you know, revenue base for government so that they can build the infrastructure that we need as a society, that we can cover costs of things like healthcare and education. That has, I think, really come to the forefront as they really understand now how important our sector is and the fact that it is everywhere. You know, tourism isn't just in main cities. It's in every political riding. It's in every community. It's at all the border towns. It's in the very south of the country to the very north, as we like to say here in Canada, from coast to coast to coast.
What's something that you hope will take from this and grow from in the next 3 to 5 years? You know, what's a real ambition that you have?
Well, I think that what we've seen right from the get-go is that Canada was kind of missing at the international table. And so we've made a concerted effort to really start to participate at the global table and part of those global conversations. We are an active member of the World Travel and Tourism Council now. I've been on their COVID recovery task force since the beginning, and really wanting to be a part of those international conversations around the seamless traveler experience. You know, what we decide to do here in Canada needs to line up with what's happening around the world, because let's face it, tourism is a global sport. You're not necessarily just going to travel in one country. So you want that seamless experience. You want to know what to expect as you travel from country to country, and Canada needs to be a part of that value proposition.
So getting back to your own professional journey, I said this to other folks that manage associations, and that you bridge two different industries. One is the industry that is travel, and the other is association management. How do you balance those?
It comes down really to that value proposition, and making sure that what we're doing for the good of the organization also answers the question, is this good for the members? So if we're looking for ways of generating revenue, as an example, how can we diversify that so that we're not putting all of that on to the members' shoulders? So how do we diversify so that we can operate and serve our members as fully as possible without putting all of the financial burden on them? And again, it goes back to what I said before, it's communication, and just constantly and transparently telling people what we're doing for them and engaging them. I like to say we do our advocacy work using an evidence generation strategy. And what that means is that we use every tool at our disposal, whether it's primary research, secondary research, focus groups, discourse analysis. You know, we use all of it so that our members can see themselves in the work that we do on their behalf. And if they don't see themselves, then we need to take a step back and you know, get back to square one, which is listening.
When you think back on your career so far, who's been the biggest influence on your business philosophy, on your work philosophy?
Well, there's a couple. The first person would have been the CEO when I worked at Retail Council of Canada. Her name's Diane-Brise Bois. She's still the CEO. She took me under her wing, and I certainly learned a lot from her about presenting myself professionally, learning how to talk to people who were, you know, more senior than I was. She taught me a lot about how to manage people. She was certainly a great mentor. She's still a great friend. The other person is my very good friend, Joanne Bélanger. Joanne has this way of being with people. She's just incredibly engaging, and she makes it look so effortless. And she's been one of my biggest supporters, but she has also been that wall that I get to bounce ideas off of, and she's always been a great, great support to me. So two very, very amazing women that have been, pillars in my career for sure.
A quick reminder about the Tourism Academy, offering online, on-demand, and live in-person training so that you can create stakeholder alignment, demonstrate the relevance of tourism to your community, empower local businesses, and improve the local tourism experience. All of that so you can have more positive social mentions, longer stays, and more repeat high-volume visitors. Build a culture of inclusion while saving time and money with online tourism ambassador training and certification by the Tourism Academy, tourismacademy.org.
Looking at both of those and the examples that you just said, there, you know, there were two things that stood out. One is that you were able to learn from them, and also to bounce ideas off of them, sort of improve upon your own thinking. In a way, what are maybe two or three of the management techniques that you hope people recognize in you and your staff recognizes in you?
Well, one, I think that I'm I'm concerned about the whole person. And so I very much recognize the fact that people's personal lives intersect with their work lives, and there's no getting around that. And you shouldn't get around it. You need to be able to support your team in their goals and their achievements, regardless of what side of the desk they're on. And so I think you would hear from my team that I'm always asking about, you know, how they're doing. I try and remember things that they've said before about, you know, what happened with grandma on the weekend, or mm-hmm. if, you know, they're supporting parents, or what's going on with their kids. You know, I want to know that, because that helps, that makes them a full person, and I want to know the full person. So I think that would be one. The other thing that I think people would recognize in me is that I'm a huge advocate and supporter of mentoring young people as they come into the workforce. Working in the not-for-profit industry, we don't always have the wage envelope that for-profit businesses have. And so sometimes we end up hiring more junior people, because that's what we can afford. But then we get to help them learn and grow. And there are so many people that have worked for me that are out there working in the industry now in more progressive positions and rising through the ranks. And I'm pretty proud of all of them.
So speaking of being proud of your work, what is one thing you're most proud of?
You know, as you know, I'm with TIAC right now. I've only been here for about 6 months.
Great timing.
I know. But I spent the previous 10 years working for TIO, which is the Tourism Industry Association of Ontario. And when I took that job, I took a chance. I put a lot of faith in something that I believed in. That organization was brand new, didn't have a whole lot of foundation under it. And I was the only full-time employee. And when I left, there were 10 full-time employees. And we had an amazing network of people. We were able to be that shoulder in the time of crises for 200,000 businesses in the tourism industry in Ontario. And I felt really good about that. I felt that we had made a difference. I'd left a bit of a legacy there.
I've certainly kept up with some of the work that you guys have done and some of the initiatives that you've put forward. What are two of the big initiatives that you're working on now, or that you're hoping to bring to TIAC?
Again, I talk about, you know, our place in the global conversation, and that's something that TIAC had not been undertaking prior to my arrival. So that is certainly at the forefront. But the other piece is really expanding our network and making sure that as many tourism businesses as possible can be a part of the work that we're doing. So we're working collaboratively right now with all of our provincial and territorial partners to make sure that we can see that as a reality. And I think I have an advantage, having come from the provincial side now to the national side. I understand, I think, a little bit better than maybe my predecessors did as to what those needs are and how the relationship could work to benefit everyone.
What would you think if your kids got involved in the same industry?
My kids are. It's a family affair. So my daughter works in the hotel industry. She, through the pandemic, actually just before the pandemic, she moved to Saskatchewan. Hence this picture. She moved to Saskatchewan and is raising her family out there. And so she's been working in the hospitality and service sector in a managerial role, and she does a great job of it. My son is an audio engineer, and he works in the audiovisual event world. And so that's part of our industry mm-hmm. as well. So it's kind of cool. We can all talk shop.
Yeah. I didn't see that one coming. So what's something your constituents never ask you, but you often wish they did?
Oh, that's a tough one. Wow. You know, probably the biggest thing that they don't ask is about the process of advocacy. It's not as simple as people think. You know, when you're lobbying government, it's a slow moving machine. And so, you know, one phone call to a minister or to minister's office, you know, doesn't necessarily affect the change that you need. And it's an ongoing long process, and sometimes it can take months or years to get a change that you want made. So I guess that would be it, is it would be great if they asked more about how the process is going rather than what is the result, because the results are often hidden in the process.
You'll have to excuse me. I keep glancing down. I have a 75-pound dog at my feet who decided now is the perfect time to snore louder than he has ever done before. And it sounded like thunderclaps under my desk, so, so you have to bear with me. Do you happen to have a dog or pets or anything like that?
No. My husband and I both travel significantly for work, so we enjoy other people's pets. And we take advantage of other folks, you know, our neighbor's dog and our son's cats and that kind of thing. So
if you want to spend some time in South Florida, you know, I've got a couple trips coming up. You're more than welcome to. We have Wi-Fi. Nobody has to know. Nobody has to know.
Well, this is it, right? I mean, you can work anywhere now. You just pop a background in and off you go.
Exactly, exactly. Wrap up every interview with two questions. Number one, if folks want to learn more about TIAC or get in touch with you personally, how would you recommend they do that?
So to learn more about TIAC, go to TIAC-AITC.ca. And I am on LinkedIn, Beth Potter. And I'd be happy to connect with anyone who is looking to make that connection and learn more about what we do.
Is there anything I forgot to ask that you wish I did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll ask you the question. As we start traveling again, where's the first place you want to go?
So my sister and I have already talked about this, a trip to Central America, Central and South America, Colombia, Peru, Ecuador. And you?
Well, my first
France.
Trip... Yeah, well, that's certainly on the list, that's for sure. But my first trip will be within Canada. I want to head out east to Prince Edward Island and visit a cousin who just purchased a resort right before COVID hit. So I want to go and check out how they're doing and do some kayaking on the ocean. So that's
very
my
nice.
First. Yeah.
When I was a kid, we actually took a vacation on PEI. It's one of the most memorable. I got stung by wasps.
Oh, no. Wow.
Oh, no, it was fun.
There's so much more to see.
There's great ice cream. I mean, it's beautiful countryside, the pink sand beaches. It's a beautiful place to visit. And I should say, I did already take a trip. I went to New York City to pick up birthday cake for myself.
To pick up birthday cake? Wow.
Yes. I literally flew in. Went to the bakery, went back to the airport.
Well, see, I didn't go to, I've already taken a trip. I flew to Saskatoon to pick up my granddaughters and bring them back here for a visit, so.
How old are they?
12 and 7.
Oh, that's a fun age.
Yes, yeah, so I've just spent our long weekend here kayaking and hunting snakes and snorkeling and blowing bubbles and it's been great.
Oh, that's fun. We did, my niece came to visit me for her summer, for part of her summer break, and this year's theme was a secret garden.
Oh, nice.
So I have now some enormous sunflowers in my backyard. And all these other things that we planted. So the other thing we finish up each interview with is a random question from a conversation deck.
Okay.
So pick a number 1 to 10.
7.
Card number 7. What are two things still on your bucket list?
They're probably both travel related. My first thing would be I've not been to Scotland yet, and I really would like to go to Scotland. I read all the Diane Gabaldon books, all the Outlander stories before there was a TV show, and I'm big into historical fiction, so I really like to go there. And prior to my... prior to my trip to Ireland a few years ago, I did some background work and I discovered that my Irish heritage actually goes back to Scotland, and that my ancestors immigrated to Ireland during the Jacobite Rising. So now I've got a tie there that I want to go back and explore. So that would be one. Oh, my second one. Yeah, I think it would have to be a go back to France. I've been to France many, many times. My husband never has, and I'd like to take him and show him all the amazing parts, especially Provence and the Bordeaux regions. Those are two of my favorites.
I just couldn't help but think of wine and cheese.
Oh, of course. Yes. Wine, cheese, and bread. all the markets. The last time we were in Provence, we explored the towns by where the market was that day. That's a great way to do it.
Okay, so this is another question. If you're running out of time, just let me know. But what advice would you have for somebody who's traveling? You know, to make the most of their trip.
Yeah. Spend time talking to the locals and get to know them. That's something that some people, it's a little outside their comfort zone, but it can make the difference between a great trip and an extraordinary trip. I'll tell you a story. That trip that I mentioned that I went to France with my mom and my daughter, our car was broken into and our suitcases were stolen. And in getting through that, everybody in the village where we were staying got to know who we were. And so when we went to the boulangerie and got our baguette in the morning, or we went to the cafe, or even to the grocery store, everybody knew who we were. And people started inviting us into their homes as a show of hospitality. And we made some amazing friends that we still have to this day. And we got to see all kinds of different houses built into the ramparts of this old, old little town. And it was one of the highlights of the trip. And it all resulted is because our car was broken into.
Isn't it interesting how that happens, though? In my experience, the best memories are the ones that come from unplanned experiences.
Absolutely.
And I think we have to leave room for the unexpected.
Yeah. Well, and this is it, right? So when you're traveling, you know, take the road less taken, you know, take the secondary road, always take the highway, be willing to stop on your way. It's okay not to be at the hotel at 3 for check-in, like take a little extra time and stop when something grabs your attention. You never know what you're going to discover.
Well, I think that's great advice. And I appreciate you joining me here in business class. Those who are looking for more information will have your website up online afterwards. I appreciate you. Enjoy your afternoon.
Thanks so much, Stephen. It was great chatting with you.
And you too.
Take a course. Train your people. Teach what you love. Promote your products. Donate today at tourismacademy.org, a 501c3 nonprofit organization.